Hey everybody, it's 2017 and Shop Talk Show is back. This is episode number 246. Just Dave and I talking about last year and what's coming up this year. Some questions from y'all, like one about JavaScript projects or really any kind of project in general, like dependencies for your website that haven't seen a lot of action recently. What if the last commit from a big project you're using was 3 months ago and the last like significant work on it was a year or two ago? Is that good? Is that stable? Or is that a warning sign? I don't know. It's hard to know. We're going to talk about that and lots more coming up on Chop Talk Show. For now, Dave, please kick things off.
Should be forgot you're listening to the Shop Talk Show.
Hey, happy new year, Shop Talk listeners. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Happy new year indeed. It's 2017. As you know, Dave and I have been on a little break. I guess we took at least 3 weeks off there, if not a whole month, just because we felt like it, I guess. So we'll call this a new season of Shop Talk. Occasionally we do that. There's no true boundaries to Shop Talk Show things. We don't organize the website that way or anything like that, but it feels like a fresh season.
Fresh season break. We did not successfully redesign our website like we probably hoped to. Whoops. No.
I did get impatient though, and I pushed out a CSS Tricks redesign yesterday. Just for
fun. Really? Just you went for it, Hail Mary? Just went for,
you know, because I'm always like, there's plenty of time. Let me get the team up to speed and tell give a chance to do some debugging. Maybe I'll even hire somebody to do a QA check on it. You know, try to do a good job, and then I just don't. I just am like, it looks ready. Boop. Which is terrible and don't learn from me, but I just get excited. I just want to push it live, and then I do. And occasionally, you know, like with the WordPress site, you're like, oh, there's all these things and they're all loaded up in my head right now. Like, I got to change the page template on this. I got to port some content over here. I got to change, like, I have to activate these three plugins and deactivate this one. And it's like, I just want to do it. So it's all loaded up in my head. Anyway, that's a thing. You're thinking of, you're back from, you know, you had a little trip as well, right? You were in Arizona.
Oh, yeah. So my wife's family's all in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was great. My primary mode of transportation was a golf cart for like 2 weeks or something.
Nice.
So if you were on the west side of Phoenix cruising around the Wigwam golf course, that was me. Just me and my kids driving around, going park to park. It was cool life. But yeah, man, I will tell you this, that just between us, Chris, just between us, yes. hopefully no one's listening on this, award-winning podcast. I am not that great at just sitting around for a couple weeks. I kind of need something to do. And in the past, I've had like great success, like locking up my computer in a safe. I think I have blog posts about that, you know, and it's wonderful, you know. But oh man, this time it was just like I'm just sitting here, and then people see you just sitting there, and they're like, "Well, why don't you take the kids out?" And you're like, "Well, okay. What are you gonna do?" And they're like, "We're gonna go, you know, I don't know, go get our nails did or something." And you're just like, "All right, I'll sit here. I'll do it." Anyway, there's a bit of a stink up. I don't know if you saw it over the holidays. This is maybe the hot drama portion of the Shop Talk Show. Getting right into it, Chris.
Okay.
My friend Joe McCann, he's actually a friend of mine, but he let a tweet fly like on Christmas Eve, like the best developers I know are hacking over the holidays or something. And that got a lot of people very mad because, yeah.
Well, the idea is I can see both sides clearly, right? Like Joe is very authentically is just saying like, look, I'm just observing this fact that like people that I know who are really talented tend to sneak away and do a little programming here and there. And you're almost cooperating in a little bit in that like you're if you're not doing some of that stuff, you're pretty bored, you know? And then the other side, which is, you know, very earnestly saying, please don't glorify, like, never taking a break.
Right, right. I think that's where the nuance fell out. I think Joe is very much like, I'm helping kids, like, I'm helping my nieces, like, code or something, or, you know, like, that was his kind of perception of hacking. I'm not defending Joe. He doesn't need me to defend him, but it's just interesting. I think everyone's attitudes towards just relaxation and stuff like that. I do think like we need to like unplug and recharge. I think we've said that plenty of times here on Shop Talk, but it is interesting. Like when your hobby and your work life overlap like 100%, like what do you do? I don't know. Maybe you feel differently. You do a bunch of CrossFit, so.
Well, I'm kind of off it at the moment, not because I want to be, because I actually quite like it, but I have a little shoulder injury that's been bothering me, and I finally was like, you know what, I'm going to actually take care of this and go to the doctor, and he ordered an MRI. Unfortunately, it's nothing too bad, but it requires physical therapy, and I'm right at that point where I'm just starting physical therapy, and I'm like, you know, despite having good luck with physical therapy in the past with a different injury, I'm a little skeptical of like, can somebody please tell me what's wrong with my shoulder and how long exactly it's going to be until I'm at 100% again and can go back to CrossFit, which of course nobody wants to tell you, you know.
Oh, so it's like when you're at the doctor and no one's telling you what is actually the problem.
They're right. Just like, they're like, pull on the rubber band, boy, you know.
And you're like, is no one going to tell me when it gets fixed? Because I would like to know when it gets fixed.
You know, like I have this movie, like I want, you know, like when you break your arm in a movie or something, they like you and the doctor stand shoulder to shoulder and like he puts up the x-rays and you'd be like, you see these little cracks here? This is a compound, you know, and they like explain it to you really clearly. I don't have any evidence that anybody even looked at my MRI, you know, like I don't know. Did you look at it? I don't know. I'm just skeptical. I'm going to pull on the rubber band. So it could
just be.
It's fine. But I'll tell you, I read that tweet while I, you know, the Joe's tweet or whatever, while I was sitting around probably doing a little too much programming during the holidays. So I didn't chime in because it's just like, it's one of the, you know, conversations like that are just like, there's no use touching it. Like no good will come from it, I feel like. But I definitely kind of felt both sides of it. And here I was, I actually took the opportunity to do all kinds of weird programming stuff. I spent time redesigning CSS tricks that I normally don't have time to do, but you know, we were kind of on break and I was having fun with it. And I was just knocking out little things that kind of felt rewarding and felt like something I never make time for, but could. And then I was like, you know what? I did the classic thing where I clicked to open up MAMP and it didn't work. Apache wouldn't start up. And I just had no idea why. And I was Googling weird stuff. And I've just been in that position with MAMP so many times. And I don't necessarily blame MAMP. I blame myself for like not understanding what's under the hood and blah, blah, blah. But like I could not solve it. And I was like, oh, maybe I should wipe everything out and reinstall. But I'm just like, you know what? I've been trying to I'm so annoyed with this situation. I've been trying to replace it and do something more modern and like and understand what's going on under the hood a little bit better myself. Anyway, that I took the opportunity. I'm reading the tweet. It's like Christmas Eve. And I'm like, I have a tab open for the Docker docs. You know, I'm like learning how Docker operates, getting Docker installed on the, you know, from it. I use Docker anyway because a lot of our CodePen stuff is on it. But I don't manage it, you know, so here I am writing a Docker config file and, or what do they call it, Docker compose YAML. Anyway, I moved all of my local computer stuff over to Docker and it's like, you know, people had the question like, oh, is it, you know, tell us how to do it, you know, I don't know. But I'm like, you don't want me telling you how to use Docker, believe me. I don't know. I just did it because it seemed like the way to go. So now I can just, instead of clicking the MAMP icon, I go to the command line and type Docker compose up and it blasts up all my stuff. And I don't know, seems like a pretty good system.
That's cool. I'm kind of jealous because I would, I had like some things I'm like, I almost kind of want to run Docker as my dev environment, just so it's just like so contained and pristine, sort of like that's a virtual machine I go into to develop. I would kind of think that'd be very fun. Or just, I don't know, just clean, fenced in would be the way I want to say it. Yeah. But, and then like you talk about like projects, like, yeah, I have a lot of projects where it'd be nice. You know, I have this whole, Rails project with Daytrip, and I haven't even put it on this machine because I'm like, oh, I have to do the thing, the Postgreses and the you know, it'd be cool if I just had like a little Docker and I just like bring there, like it's a one file and it works. So, but I don't have that. So, but so
there are some dangers I can say. I changed one little config thing, and I feel like, and then stopped my Docker container and restarted it, and it was like gone. My database as part of it was just gone. You know, it kind of assumes you know what you're doing. I must have changed something so fundamental about the container that it's like, no problem. I just wiped out your old container and gave you a new container. Here you go.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, thanks. But like, I just spent a bunch of time, like, as I'm trying to develop locally on WordPress. So I had pulled my database down from production and changed what needed to be changed in there. And then actually like did some more database work, because that was part of what I needed to do for this thing. I'd done a bunch of work, and just the way Docker operates, you kind of need to know what you're doing. It's very easy to just wipe out a container that had a database in it that you needed.
Wow. Isn't it amazing computers work at all? That's maybe like my, I don't know, my, like, I'm just like, it works. It's amazing. It works at all. Anything works.
There's actually one in here about this. We might as well just do it. We have a question from,
yeah, question
from Alyssa what? Hope. Yeah.
Shop Talk Show doing questions. All right.
Meat and potato stuff. I should say, me and Dave, after this, are planning the next season, and there'll be some rapid fires still, but there'll be a more of a variety pack of shows this season.
Yeah, and after this question, we can like go back. We can go back to the New Year's-y stuff. And anyway, let's do.
Yeah, I just wanted to do this one because it's related to what we were talking about. Alyssa Hope writes in. Alyssa says, I have the opportunity to restructure the entire web dev process of a small SEO company. Small meaning they do $1 million a year. There's two or three devs, 15 total employees. What the company does is they build WordPress sites for individuals and small to medium-sized businesses. We currently set up each of those two to three developers with their own MAMP local environment with Git, which pushes to a WP Engine staging environment. We use a mismatch of FTP and SSH to take and share files, and databases travel around between developers and the environments as quickly as fake news on Facebook. Part of our process is good. Part of our process is very inefficient. My question for you guys is, what in your mind seems like the most awesomely efficient, streamlined WordPress dev process for small teams like us? Assume we're not attached to any parts of our current process and would be willing to scrap any one part or whole. We're typically working on 3 to 5 web projects at a time, so the ease in sharing changes. You get the point. Mm-hmm. So, right, and that's why I brought this up, because I'm like, I don't know, maybe a Docker would set up for you too. I also, Vagrant is very popular, and I just was talking with my neighbor who has a kind of a small media company, and they just made this choice too, and were kind of choosing between Docker and Vagrant, and ended up going with Vagrant for some reason.
You know, that's I the last kind of big PHP project I was on, they were also using Vagrant. I'm not saying it's like for that, or maybe that like PHP and Vagrant kind of grew up together. Does that they're neighbors from their kin from the old town. They went to high school together. But I'm going to say right now the flow is like MAMP on local, push to Git, push with Git to WP Engine.
Do they host Git too? I know WP Engine's kind of unusual and that they give you this staging environment that's kind of like part of how they operate, right?
Yeah, well, if WP Engine wants to sponsor the show, I'd be happy to talk about the product. But
call us up.
Yeah, I actually know quite a few people because they're here in Austin, but and I've watched the product grow up quite a bit. But it's kind of got some features that I don't know if it's normal now, like, but that were like kind of like, wow, how'd you even do that? But they kind of they kind of married Git and WordPress, like without having to do the whole repo. You just kind of push your theme and things up.
Yeah, I heard you kind of the way they. I think they want you to do is to just do the WP content folder, which is all your themes and plugins and stuff, but nothing that's WordPress core. That way they can keep core up to date. Right.
Yes. And then they have like very, they like blacklist plugins that they know will take a dump on your site or just that like really slow down your site. Like they choose the caching engine for you and they actually manage all the caching, all the not Vagrant, but Varnish, you know, like they set up like little servers that go in front of your website to make it really fast. Like they do quite a bit of work on that end. So it's kind of like, Git pushing your site plus a bunch of speed improvements and then kind of also like a health meter. They don't have an actual health meter, I don't think, but just they kind of vet plugins and things to make sure you're not just like shipping a piece of garbage up. And that this kind of happens too at what's the WordPress product? Automatics, like VIP, WordPress VIP, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
They kind of do the same thing, but VIP is weird too, because it's kind of just one big WordPress multi instance and you have to like namespace all your stuff, right? And when you ship to that. Mm-hmm. But I'm on the do not change your dev, like your production environment, unless you really need to trip. I wouldn't change it unless it's not working for you.
Well, I see. You think this is pretty much fine. They got MAMP going on. They're already on Git. They're already using WP Engine. They're probably like their setup is probably kind of okay already.
Yeah, I think like where you're probably having problems is it's that classic like database sync thing.
Yeah, it says we use a mismatch of FTP and SSH to take and share files and databases travel around or whatever. It does seem like possibly the, you know, a classic Shop Talk Show sponsor, not sponsoring this particular episode, but, you know, everybody ever, like my neighbor included, everybody that I know that works with WordPress, they just use WP Migrate DB Pro because like, okay, occasionally you'll have weird issues with it or whatever, but it can migrate. Not only your databases, but it does smart stuff with those databases so that when it's finished, everything is like kind of in good shape. And it can migrate media files as well. And it kind of seems like if you're shipping databases around, you might as well use that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just let it all happen through, you know, you don't even have to use SSH at all. You just let it talk to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if there's a great flaw in WordPress, it's that these hard-coded file paths kind of in the system, or even the URLs, you know, like, but how do you fix that? You know, like an image path, you kind of need the whole URL, you know, but,
you do anyway, because of syndication essentially, which is happening. You know, it used to be RSS absolutely needed it, but now it's like all your links in Apple News and Instant Articles and Google News and all that stuff. They need fully qualified URLs. Yeah. And there's tricky ways around it. Like I just dealt with this because I was working on the redesign in CSS just locally. I was like, I don't want to move all my image files. I have a decade of image files on here that I want to like pull down into this Docker container and I don't want to. It's many gigabytes of stuff. So I'm like, I'm just not gonna. Fortunately, you know, with WP Migrate DB Pro or whatever, it kind of does that DB change stuff if you want it to, and you can just tell it not to do that, and then all the URLs are the same and it points to your production stuff. But I think I accidentally did do it. And then I was like, you know what? This is a job for htaccess. And I just had it, anything that it pointed to an asset in the WP content folder, I just rewrote to a production URL. So I can kind of just forward at least the image requests.
Like out to that thing.
Just to production, which isn't great for offline use. But like while you're just like, oh, whatever. I don't feel like downloading 10 gigabytes images. Let me just point these to a place where I know they're hosted online, which is the production site.
Chris, don't I we'll talk about it offline, but I've been thinking about media stuff, and so we'll talk offline.
You got a startup idea? It's good.
Not a startup. It's like a open source project that will horcrux my soul, and then I'll die because more open source to get yelled at about. Hey,
well, good luck, Alyssa. You know, it'd be better to identify what your pain points are and try to fix the pain points than just throwing it all away and just like switching to some dumb stuff we're talking about just for no reason. You know, I would think the main advantage to something like this Docker setup, Dave likes the fencing of Docker. A lot of people like Vagrant because it's like, then if you're a fourth, fifth, sixth dev joins your team, they pull this repo and run the Vagrant and it's like they have an identical environment set up. It's not just like, okay, now download map, make sure you have these settings in place that are identical to these. There's like, it's a config file, you know, essentially for a dev environment. That's what's so appealing about it.
Yeah. I had this weird issue on my Windows machine, my new big supercomputer. I would like,
how's that going?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. What is it? Hyper Terminal, the hyper.is app from is it Zeit? Is that the name of the?
Yeah, it's the really like hip terminal.
Hipster.
Is it for? Oh, look, it's for everything. It's for Linux, Apple, and Windows. That's great.
Yes.
It's like it's designed in like CSS is what styles it essentially.
Yes, yes. And so like it's totally customizable. It has tabs that's never existed. Like a terminal that looks this good and functions this good has never existed on Windows. So now it does, and it's kind of wonderful. I did find a crashing bug, but like a blue screen bug. But whoops. But it's a it's really great, but I was trying to get Docker up for this reason. Like, oh, I'm just going to do a Docker thing. And I had a client, and they're like, hey, can we do this? And I'm like, I think I found a Docker file that does this. And so I was like, I'll just install Docker and run it. And then it just crashed my system and sent me into a crash loop. And it was this weird bug where Docker for Windows doesn't work on high-end CPUs or something, like beefy CPUs. It just falls over. It like tries to consume the whole CPU, and the CPU just tanks. And it was just like, so I was having this crashing bug and it's really bad, but I hear it's fixed now. And so I'm going to try to go in and, but it's weird. It worked on my Surface, but it doesn't work on this big machine that I have. Isn't that weird? It's like, oh, your problem is your computer's too beefy. So it doesn't, it actually works a little too well and falls over. So, but anyway, I'm fearful because it was such a bad crash. Like I had to like log into my computer, disable the thing within 6 seconds or else my computer would crash. Like that's, I had to like hack the system. Yeah, totally. And I had to like hack into my computer, like all keyboard, because the mouse isn't even registered at this point. And then like, it was dramatic. So, but I made it, I figured it out or I saved my computer, but I want to get back in and use Docker, but I'm a little scarred, but. Anyway,
snake all right. Bitten. It's a thing.
Okay, well, Chris, hey, I thought it'd be a good chance to look at our report card for the year. We do this occasionally in years past. We kind of look at stats on guests and shows and everything. Last year, I actually didn't get that number, but we are on this is 246.7. Shop Talk Show. We did about, I don't know, like 40-ish episodes last year. We started the year off with Ash Dryden. That was 198. So we did like 48 episodes.
I actually remember that. I mean, of course I remember it because it was, you know, I remember all of our shows to some degree, but I was just thinking about it because I recorded it from the garage of a rental house in the Florida Keys. Because it's just that was where I was at the time. We took a little vacation down there and we're going again. It's become a little tradition. So I leave next week and I won't be recording a show from the garage down there. But I remember talking to Ash in that garage. Anyway.
I will always remember
that's our right, time. It was January.
Chatting in that garage, Ash. But and then we went, we celebrated our like 200th anniversary, and then we had a lot of great shows, a lot of great guests, some panels. We did a lot of two-person shows last year. I don't know if anyone picked up on that theme, but we kind of like had a lot of two-person shows.
Two guests. There was a lot of guests. Rapid fires, which is just us two, and then we had right. like pairing guests. Yeah, that's right. We did do a lot of that looking back here.
We did a lot of rapid fires. That was mostly like conferencey stuff. And then we kind of went into kind of a whole season of it. Just A, because of planning, but B, because we kind of wanted to. That was sort of, I think you and I both were like, we like these episodes where we just sit around and talk. So we should just kind of, do those. But, I kind of wanted to do like our report card thing. We do kind of like gender and diversity kind of stats, just kind of looking through our guests. I think if I did the math right, we had about 31 people on the show. I'm counting panels and things like that. And then we had, and 17 of those 31 were female. So I guess that's right at about 50% or just a little bit over. So I think that's pretty good. Feeling like, I'm glad we hit that number there. But sad trombone is our diversity ranking, Chris, is very bad. Like I barely two, I think is the answer. Maybe it's in the 4 to 5 people, of colors. And so that's not great, Chris. And so we need to, maybe keep, an eye on that and kind of plan for that going forward in the future.
And we will. We get to plan today and work on that. It's just, yeah, it's good to...
And you know, there's probably people out there who are like, wow, why do you got to do that? And just let people blah, blah. And it's like, I think everyone who's listened to the show knows it. It's kind of, I think you and I both see eye to eye on this, Chris. Is it just, we want to kind of represent, you know, the whole picture of development, not just the like... I don't know, not just the dudes of development. So we kind of want to have...
There's this awkward thing where you're like, when somebody says something like, well, I have a job opening and I just want to point out that I would love it if not all white dudes applied for this job. They just say something like that, you know, and that immediately will cause a little storm because... What they're saying is, oh, so you're considering the color of someone's skin when you're this job. You know, that is the definition of racism. Oh, you're considering gender for this role. You know, that is the definition of, you know, what do you call the gender version of racism? I'm sorry, I'm not, it's not all loaded into my brain right now. But you're like, I guess we are. Like, if that's how you want to think of it, you feel free to, jerk. But it's like, the point is that you're actively trying to course correct. The problem is, this is a problem. So I'm going to, that's how I think of it anyway. And my thinking of this is infantile and I don't spend as much time as I could, but that's how I think of it. Is I've always liked the, like, no, I'm actively trying to course correct a known problem.
So. Yeah, well, I think it, I don't know, I think, was there, there's a big stink up a long time ago just about I don't even want to say the person's name. There's a stink up about like, oh, I'm a white guy, I'm like not getting conference slots, therefore these like quotas are bad. And it's just like no one wants token spots in conferences or any, no one wants it. No one wants to be the token anything. But like I say from my personal experience, like I've only benefited from hearing diverse perspectives at conferences, and I want to put that in our podcast. I mean, I still like the best talks, Chris, like that one morning we went to like 4 or 5 SVG talks in a row and they're all by women. It was great. I heard and learned things I'd never heard in probably 200 previous talks. So it's great. So
good. And it's emotional. I'm sure there's people right now being emotionally like, God, just wishing we weren't talking about this, or just like blah, 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 and moving forward in their podcast or whatever. And I don't know what to say about that, but I have emotions about it too. I mean, this stuff is never comfortable to talk about and think about. It just isn't, particularly, you know, to me. I just, because I know my own brain. I was leaving the gym yesterday, Dave, and this black dude bicycles up to me, right. I'm getting in my truck, and he's like, "Help me out, something." You know, he wanted something from me. You know. And I was like, dude, I can't help you. I was admittedly like kind of scared and like not enjoying the situation of somebody that just came all up on me or whatever. I was like, dude, I can't help you. And I got in my truck and he goes, man, you are racist to my, you know, and here I'm just like, I guess I am, but I really just don't want to give you anything. You know, but it's like then of course I have to spend 2 days thinking about I guess I am or whatever. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
it,
no.
It's just emotion. Like it doesn't I don't feel like I should have given the guy the keys to my emotional stability or whatever, but I can't, you can't help it, you know? And it's, I don't know. Don't feel bad for me. Maybe I was a dick. I don't even know, you know? But it's like, that's why this stuff is so emotional. Cause when you get accused of something, it's like rough.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's emotion, identity, you know, no one wants to be Hitler, you know? So, but yes, it's anyway, I think we are like trying to build a diverse perspective. We keep trying, just know that we do that. If that doesn't suit you, there are a lot of podcasts where three white guys sit around and talk about Apple products. So you guys can go listen to those. Hey, yeah, Dave, you really,
what was it? There was a good tweet the other day. Like, what is a gathering of not very attractive men called or something? A podcast. I can't remember. It was good.
Yeah. Hey. I represent that.
10-4. We have some more questions. Our good friend Una sent one in. Should we blast that one?
Yeah, here we go. Una Kravitz, friend of the show, which she hasn't been like on, has she? We'll fix that in 2017 here. Here we go.
Hey, Chris and Dave. It's Una Kravitz. I'm calling in to ask about a framework called Express.js. It's used for middleware and server-based applications, and I've used it in the past. The last time was about 2 years ago. So I was looking up tutorials on best practices and boilerplates, and noticed that they hadn't been updated in a while, like 4 to 5 years. The codebase is also relatively stale. So I asked on Twitter, and the responses I got were that most people do, in fact, still use Express. Also, it's Twitter, so I got a lot of people telling me to try their favorite new hotness, too. Anyway, I was wondering what your thoughts are on this. Is it a good thing that there haven't been updates in a while? That means stability, but in the JavaScript world, it's very rare. Or is it a bad thing that nobody is talking about it anymore and no longer updating the boilerplates with new best practices?
Okay,
this is a good one. There's a lot there. Yeah, probably know more about mean than I, or I say mean because that's how I think of it. But perhaps people out there have heard of the mean stack, MEAN. And I feel like it's the Express.js that Una is talking about is the most like, I don't know, it makes the least sense to me. I think people know what Node is, right? Node.js, that's the N of mean. And then Mongo is a database so that you put data in there. That's the M. That makes sense. And Angular, I think a lot of people that watch the show understand what Angular is. And then there's this E, though, in the middle, Express. What the heck is Express?
So Express is like a, I think Una described it as like a middleware or kind of a server sort of language. But if you've ever used like Sinatra for Rails, or it's very similar, or if you've ever used Gulp, I kind of see a lot
so
of
Gulp routes in. Does it do routing?
Yeah, routes basically. So you say like, you know, app, you know, you have a variable called app and that's your server or something, yeah. You know, server dot,
you're writing in Node. This is Node. Right.
Yeah, you're I'm gonna mouth node you a little bit, but like server.get, you know, slash for like your root of your directory, and then you're like comma function, blah blah blah. And then it says like render or like include this page, basically. You can do a lot of different things there, but it's basically just like spit out this piece of HTML if you get this. Like if you hear this request, mm-hmm. give this response. And that's so request response. That's kind of what Node.
This middleware makes sense there. You're writing the JavaScript that describes how your web server for your app is going to work. Like, oh, I'm getting a request for this particular URL. This is what I want you to do. Execute this JavaScript. Send this stuff back.
You're writing your server, basically, how you're going to handle URLs, which can be like very daunting if you've never done that before. But if you like understand REST or something like that, it's actually pretty easy. It's like, if I hear this, great. Or if I have a GET request to this, I do this. If I have a POST request to this, I do this. I handle the data this way.
It's probably particularly easy when you have like an SPA, right? Like a single page app. That's because it's kind of like, I'm getting a request for slash. I'm getting a request for anything at all. Send back this same stuff.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing server-side rendering of some kind.
Yeah. So I used it on what is that app I have? GlobalDefense.club. Global Defense, the shooter game I made. Mm-hmm. I have a GET, and this is like maybe a 20-line server file, and there's some WebSocket stuff going on, but it's basically, if you get the index, the slash, you go to the index. If you get the like instructions page, go to that page. And I may even have some logic to like, if this page exists, return this. But if it doesn't, like, let's go through this tree of logic. Cause I have like a game page or a board page that's like how to, you know, that is for the, like the game board, the like actual level that you play. So there's it's just like a little thin piece of logic. I really like it. To kind of dig into Yuna's question, here's how I sort of understand it. I could be wrong, but here's kind of how I understand it. I think that Express is almost kind of like mission accomplished banner. I know that's terrible, but I think they just kind of tightly scoped things. They said, like, you know what? This is all it's going to do. This is all the, like, we just take requests and we give responses, and there's an API to handle that. This is all we're going to do. We're not going to take on this big, like, you know, I don't know, how do we deal with every MIME type ever or something, but they probably do that. But, like, I think they just scoped it so incredibly well that once you've kind of done that, you kind of don't need to be under.
So Una's saying it's really rare in JavaScript to have a really stable kind of mission accomplished product, but that's what this is, huh?
Yeah, more or less that's what this is. And even Node itself, it's changed, but it hasn't, you know, they're just kind of building in new V8 language features since the 0.10 product, basically. It's just kind of getting a little better incrementally.
That's right, though. It hasn't been touched in 3 months. It hasn't been touched fundamentally in much longer than that. And yet here it sits at 30,000 stars on GitHub, which is some like next level stuff. I mean, this thing is huge.
But it is a good question. I'm, you know, you'd never want to use something that looks dead. You know, you wouldn't want to use it. But we also, like, you have to take into consideration, like, Express powers, you know, probably millions of websites at this point. So, or pages or something. So how, you know, they can't make big changes or else things will fall over. So it is kind of like, you know, I think people...
Right.
If you want to do an experimental web server, you probably do something else. But I think Express is like,
it's tricky. Still good. This is like an eternal question that we'll never have any answer. Is like, do you want software that doesn't change so much? Or, you know, for example, this is an analogy I'm thinking of because I just read an article that said from SAS to post CSS that, like, let me dig up the author. There was really well written and well presented article, I thought, that was worth reading by Tyler Gaw. And he was like, I have this project in SAS. So I have all these .scss fields for my project. I thought I would try to switch to post CSS because I like post CSS. So the article was very post CSS positive, which is fine. I don't care. But it's like, how can you port the whole project over? Well, you can pick out post CSS plugins that replicate a lot of what SCSS can do. Nesting, mix-ins, extends, placeholders, variables, whatever, right? You can replace most of SAS. And then he, you know, had a couple troubles here and there and documented how he got through that. And now he's done. He's got this project that he's basically switched from SAS to post-CSS. To me, I'm not convinced. I'm like not itching to do that because at the end, you've accomplished nothing, right? Now you're just on post-CSS instead of SAS. Not only are you on post-CSS, which is a dependency, but each one of those plugins is a different dependency by different authors, and some of them are like part of the post-CSS project and some of them aren't, and some of them are dead, like Express or whatever. Like there's people not working on necessarily. And then there's even more considerations here too. Like he like flipped over, instead of using like a $ variables like SAS has, he switched over to the like --- CSS custom properties style variables, which then compile down into not CSS custom properties anymore. So it's one of those things that like, I feel like that was one of the like early strikes for me against post CSS, is that it's like, take these new futuristic CSS features and compile them down into not those features anymore. But it's like the problem is they're not one-to-one like that. Like a native CSS extends are going to be different than a pre-processed extend. CSS custom properties are a different, fundamentally different concept than just flopping, like just a replacement value abstraction. I go on a lot about this, but you know what I mean? Like these are like, is it like in the case of Express, where you kind of made the argument that it's not dangerous. This is a solved problem and please continue using it. It's a solved problem. Are these post CSS plugins in that same boat? They work. So who cares if they're dead? They're not dead. They're stable.
Yeah, well, and it's almost the more metal it is, the more stable you want it, you know, like, because Apache isn't like shipping daily doesn't mean I'm gonna stop using Apache or Nginx or something, you know. It's like
I think these are too small though. I can tell you from experience. We upgraded post CSS on CodePen and it broke a couple post CSS plugins, and I just pulled them. I had to pull them, which was not a comfortable thing to do because it's like, there's code written that use those plugins and they don't work no more.
But it's also errors, you know, like that's what's tough. I think that's a good example. Post CSS is you're trading the monolith for the microservices, you know, but the monolith does its job really well, like especially with libsass in the mix now too.
It seems like a stabler bet. And it's not like I'm not trying to turn people off to post CSS because it's like you can get so much of what you need out of pre-processing with SAS. And if there's some kind of like post CSS is this great parser that allows you to write cool, interesting little bespoke stuff, you can use them together. You know, it's not an either or. And I think that had something to do with the naming of post CSS, is that they think of it as like, you know, run this at the end. Even though that's not, unfortunately, that's not how it kind of goes down. I have a whole write-up on this. It's like sometimes you need to actually run it before SAS, and sometimes you need to run it after. It depends on what it is. Because SAS, let's say you, a post-CSS author, invented some really weird syntax for something. They're like, oh, there should be like at popcorn rules in CSS. Well, at popcorn is fine. I mean, whatever, that's like it probably is never going to exist. You should probably namespace it some way so there's guaranteed that it will never exist in CSS. But SAS will probably choke on it. So that's one example that you'd have to run before SAS. And some of the stuff is really meant to run after SAS, like auto prefixer or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like in a true environment, you kind of have to pick and choose which things you're going to run first and which things you're going to run at. And then it's like, God, why even bother? It's too complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Una, do we answer that well enough? I don't know.
I think it's good to use, teach, you know, I used it on a project last year, two projects last year. So, I mean, it's good. I think it just is such kind of a solved thing. You don't need a whole bunch more features and stuff, but if you kind of want the experimental things, I don't know, HTTP 2 or something like that, you know, maybe it's time to branch out. So
what if you're the author of this? Wouldn't that just give you night sweats? If you had a project on GitHub that had 30,000 stars on it, I mean, I know at that point there's probably like a team of people behind it and stuff, but just every morning you're going to wake up and there's going to be like 3 or 4 just like totally weird new issues filed to it.
It
happens on CodePen, but I wake up and be like, these are my customers and I'm going to support them because it's a business.
I get the sweats about like typos. It's like, you have a typo here. It's like, oh God, how am I going to fix it?
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. That's the URL you want to go to get 3 months of their bootstrap plan for free. Rollbar is all about error tracking. It does an amazing job of that. So you know, it's really easy to integrate too, and it integrates into any application, you know, JavaScript, which is Ember, Angular, Backbone, Node.js, or your Ruby stack with Rails, .NET, PHP, even Flash, iOS, anything. They've got it all covered. You put it in there and it starts capturing the errors that your app throws, which it's definitely throwing some, believe me. And lets you know about them. So not only, so you need to know what these errors are in order to fix them, gives you the stack trace and all that. It groups them intelligently too. So if your app is like throwing like thousands of this one kind of error, but it's kind of minor, it's good to know. It's good to not get an email about every single time that error happens thousands of times. That's annoying. You know you need to fix it, but maybe it's lower priority than some other kind of bug and allows you to prioritize and that type of thing. It integrates with like Slack and Jira tickets and all that type of stuff too. So you kind of get to decide like, okay, put this type of error here or whatever. It allows you to, you know, gives you the information you need to fix the errors that are happening in your app and prioritize them and know about them, but not be too annoyed by them and stuff like that. Just a couple of lines of code to integrate into your app, whatever that app is. It's kind of amazing software. Thank you, Rollbar. Again, the URL is rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. $87 value to sign up for their bootstrap plan for free.
All right, let's do some more questions here. We got we're going to power through here. Zeke Farwell writes in. This one's a little bit technical here, but we're going to get through it together, team. I recently needed some outline text on a web page and was surprised to find that the text stroke CSS property is still not standard. Can I use shows that the latest versions of all the main browsers support it? Edge supports it in version 15, which is kind of in the insider build right now, with the following caveat: Firefox and Edge specifically support the WebKit text stroke property without having support for their own prefix. So there's no Moz text stroke or MS text stroke. This all seems sort of backwards. I thought everyone decided vendor prefix properties were bad. Also, it looks like there was a similar property called text outline in the W3C draft starting in 2007, but it was removed in 2011. Do either of you know the history here? Was TextStroke not made in? Why has TextStroke not made it into the standards track despite being introduced a decade ago? Have people just forgotten about it since? Similar effects can be achieved with SVG text or multiple text shadows. Here's what I pieced together so far. Here's kind of an outline. December 26, WebKit introduces TextStroke on their blog. March 2007, first occurrence of text outline in the CSS working draft. Mm-hmm. March 2008, Safari 3.1 ships WebKit TextStroke. January 2010, Chrome 4 branches off, supports WebKit TextStroke. September 2011, we're in 2011 now, W3C CSS working draft text outline gets removed. It says bye-bye. And then in September 2016, Firefox 49 ships support for WebKit TextStroke, and Edge will ship it in the near
future. So just to be dead clear about this, there's TextStroke. TextStroke is one that has never been in a spec ever. It's just like was dropped by WebKit at some point under a vendor prefix dash WebKit text stroke. There's no spec for it ever. There never has been. Now Then there was text outline, which probably was a response to that because it was 1 year later about, or like half a year later. They're like, oh, we're not going to call it text stroke. We're going to call it text outline. And there was a spec for it in 2007. And then probably because every property ever in the, you know, the web standards thing, as I understand it, has its own little journey. You know, different opinions and different browsers being interested and not interested and what spec authors are working on it and who's what developers are caring about it and whatever. Probably it was dropped because it wasn't very well defined or something, or there's problems with it. I even looked at the spec when it first dropped in there, the 2007 one, and it, you know, it looks fine, I guess. But in my mind, the one big problem with WebKit TextStroke, and there's a CSS Tricks article about this, is that it follows the outside of a letter form or whatever, you know, a character or whatever it may be. But the only way it does that is by, like, straddling the outside line in a way.
Okay. So if we have a straight line, it's on the left and right edges. It takes those little points and kind of enhances those.
Yeah, like if it got really thick, you can imagine like the text stroke like encroaching on the center of the letter form and pushing outside.
Okay.
And I feel like I don't know what like imagine like text shadow or something. Text shadow never like goes inside the letter form. So like the letter keeps its like integrity. You know, it still looks like the letter it is. It just has a shadow behind it now. Whereas the stroke like smashes into the letter. And like destroys what it looks like, kind of. It just almost always looks like garbage. That's what's so amazing to me about TextStroke, and how the hell did it ever become a thing without any option to set it any other than this like straddling way? What we need is like text outline position or something that says be on the outside of the letter only. At that point, I could see it being useful because you can't really replicate a TextStroke without shadows. I've seen it where you like you have four different text shadows, one going up and left and right and down, and kind of sometimes depending on the font you can kind of get that to look like a stroke, but otherwise there really is no way to put stroke around text outside of SVG.
And stroke does interesting things like the way it blends, you know, together when like on two letters, you know, like it's a little bit different.
So, I could see it being kind of useful, but not until there's some way to position it on the outside entirely. And the spec didn't account for that, and TextStroke doesn't account for that. Now, Zeke points out some interesting stuff, because it's like just in September of last year does Firefox start supporting it, which is super weird. And they only support the Dash WebKit version, probably as a march by some of these browsers to be like, oh, we need to be more like cross-compatible with stuff. And usually that means supporting weird WebKit stuff.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. I was actually on like a thread with Mike Taylor, who's been on the show. He was with Opera then, but I think he's with Mozilla's Compat team now, so he might be a good person to hit up. But there's a lot of bugs, and it's just like, this property is weirdly popular. We need to support it. I was on the WebKit background fill thread, or WebKit text fill transparent.
Yeah, I remember that one. That's because it's like you want to like set a knockout of text or have the background of text be like some leaves or whatever.
Yeah, you're doing that like knockout text effect. And I think Firefox was like, we have enough sites doing this that are broken. Like, so we need to kind of just whatever port or kind of reverse engineer all this WebKit knowledge. I guess WebKit's open source, so it's not true reverse engineering, but they had to kind of just say like, okay, we have to kind of poach this feature. And I think that is why it sits behind a flag, because the flag there is basically non-standard. And Edge and Firefox made
it. Firefox is shipping it not with Moz, but only with WebKit, because they're saying like, we didn't touch this. You did this.
Yeah, this is y'all. This is not us. that's the best. Like, that's.
And now Edge is shipping it too. Edge is planning to ship it. It's not even out yet, but Edge is going to start supporting WebKit TextStroke too. Remember, TextStroke is the one that doesn't have any spec at all.
Mm-hmm.
Oi.
Yeah. So we're going to get like a bunch of weird implementations, or probably not weird. They'll probably be fine. But it's unfortunate there's not a standardization. But maybe if all browsers have it, it becomes kind of a de facto standardization.
Then text outline comes back. It gets spec'd out better and shipped. Maybe. That would be nice. Yeah. Because as it stands, it's so weird that browsers are actively working on this thing that has no spec and sucks.
Yeah. But I would say, you know, too, this was 2006. SVG was a pipe dream. Like the idea that we had ever come to terms or agree on a single thing about SVG at that point was like, no. So I don't know, man. For me, in my day to day, whenever I'm like, oh, I'm going to make a fancy text thing, some custom hero or something, I immediately start thinking SVG. I don't even entertain.
I'm actually not even up to date whether if SVG's text stroking abilities are any better than HTML.
Well, I think what's cool about SVG is it just has you can control stroke width and things like that.
I think you
like
can do
more like Illustrator.
But you still can't. I think that's an SVG2 thing, which is kind of a dead in the water kind of thing. Sadly, is that stroke positioning thing? I think may have been coming and isn't anymore. But yeah, I don't know. I occasionally hear people maybe I'm more fired up about them than the average person. But I think strokes are pretty useless unless you can get them inside or outside. But never that straddling thing that messes up the shape. Looks like shit.
Yeah, I picture that 1970s, you know, that 70s show style type, you know, just these big fat characters that are really weird and loosey goosey, and I don't know.
Like, yeah, the fatter I don't know what exact characteristics are, but a big beefy face can take a stroke with the straddling a little bit better. But if you just open like your average, you know, I just was sitting on Can I Use, well, with the Web Inspector open, applying it to just the thin type they use on there, and it just like destroys it. Any text stroke at all, even one pixel, is just like dead. Okay, cool. How much time we had? We're 53 minutes in here. That won't match up with what you're looking at on your podcaster.
We have an internal clock. We're going. I think we could do one more, maybe.
Sure.
Are we biting off more than we could do? Let's do one more. Happy New Year! Your bonus question. Here we go. Alexi Partinen means bearded, so thank you, Alexi. I also am Partinen. Cheers. I'm building a website for an event that has around 500,000 visitors every year. Over 80% of website traffic comes during the four festival days. So it's a festival. There's four hot days that it gets 500,000 visitors. Every year, the site crashes on the first day, event day, womp womp, because servers can't handle the 100,000 visits a day. Now I'm rebuilding the site on WordPress. Do you have any tips on how to handle this kind of traffic? With love from frozen Finland, Alexi Partinen.
I think it's basically called load testing or surge or burst testing or something. But yeah, a lot of people cover this. You definitely, Dave, you told me you've worked with companies that needed it. I once worked with a company that's like, oh, we're going to be on Alton Brown is going to declare our cupcakes the best in the world or something on his show tonight. So we have to be ready, you know?
Right. Yeah, I have a client. I can't say who it is quite yet, but they have a Super Bowl. Sunday is a big day for them. They serve circular food items that are delivered to your home, and it's a big day for them. And so they have millions and millions and millions of hits on that day, which just dwarfs kind of the. Well, maybe not dwarfs, but it's just a surge of traffic on that day. And so what they've kind of the caution, I guess they've kind of delivered to me is like every kind of kilobyte, every request, everything matters. And it's going to hurt if it hits, you know, if you have an extra, you know, image. I mean, like at this scale where it's, you know, hundreds of thousands on like one day or something like that. That scale can actually, like one image can be very expensive, just kind of, ooh, like all of a sudden it becomes a problem. So every request is kind of a problem. So that's something to take in mind.
I think all the normal performance stuff is going to help you. Yes, if we can remove this one image, that's going to be a big deal on this day at this time. You know, like can you take the database out of the equation entirely somehow? You know, that would be mm-hmm. cool. Less moving parts is good. Can you inline anything? Like, I'm not sure what the best, but the deal is, for you need something to confirm that it's going to work before the day. And you already know, for somehow you have the data already, and you know that it's 500,000 visitors in 4 days. So there's software for this. Not surprising, right? You're not the only person in this position. And yeah, it is called load testing or performance testing. There's probably, I would think load testing is a good way to, good thing to Google to find a tool for. A lot of these things have free trials. So hopefully you can find one that can hit you, you know, set up a staging server mm-hmm. and hit it with the numbers that you expect to get and see if it falls over. And if it does, work on it, see if you can make it more efficient somehow, figure out what fell over, and do it again. Can you pull down your custom fonts for a day? Can you, I don't know, whatever, you know, do whatever you need to do.
Well, and I think like, you know, servers can only handle so much. I mean, a server is almost like a queue. Like people come, they say, "Hey, I want the files." You say, "Okay, let me go get all the files and I'll give them to you." Some of them take a long time because I have to like do dynamic scripting. Those are the long, expensive files. So it'll take a long time to get those. And then they give them a bucket of files and then they say, "Okay, who's next?" And so if you have 100,000 people jamming it a day, I mean, you might need to look into kind of these expensive WordPress hosting or kind of what we were talking about before, like WP Engine and things like that. I say expensive because you can host WordPress.
You might want to give them a heads up too. Server. Be like, "Oh, here, I changed you because I heard you were good at this kind of thing. Oh, by the way, on this day, we're expecting this much. So please help me."
Yeah, no, and I think like if you get a service that hosts you to kind of help walk you through that, I think that's the best thing you can do. Like
they'll know what to do too. You know, like working with Tim Sabat at CodePen, he knows like we can plan for that type of thing a lot easier. Unfortunately, once in a while we'll get hit with some botnet or something, right? We can see in our traffic. And what you don't want is to just assume that your regular scaling is going to handle it. The way our scaling is built at CodePen, it's watching it all the time. And if load goes up, no problem. It's just, it senses that and it spins up more servers to handle it and load balances them all. What you don't want is for it all to hit you at once. Because if it all hits you at once, the servers fall over and servers start spinning up, but your website is down in the meantime because they got so hammered so quickly. You know, you need some degree of like a graceful incline of this, and you may not get that graceful incline. So you need to spin up the servers ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You might. Like that morning of or whatever you're about to launch, you need to maybe like quintuple your server load.
Right. And you might not even have multiple servers. So this is your opportunity to look into that.
I would say kind of things you need to do, divorce your assets and your WordPress for sure. Right. Like host either, you know, use Cloudflare or something, you know, to kind of get a CDN for your assets. That way your server never feels the hurt from requesting a big asset. Like it never has to load that in memory and hand it over. It says, "Oh, okay, I'm going to the asset server to get the assets," and then just make the server that your WordPress is on only do WordPress. I think that's the other sort of thing too. Your database, if it's a very transactional thing, that's tough too. But I imagine like an event is just a lot of calendaring, kind of like this is happening on this day. I think you can do a lot of database caching for that. That shouldn't need to change a whole bunch. So hopefully we helped you, Alexi. That is kind of, it's tough doing things at big scale. So you're going to learn a lot and probably you could teach us a lot. So anyway, Chris, it is 2017. As my friend Sue likes to call it, 20 serpentine. So it's a snaky year. It's Ooh, very spooky. All right. Here we go. Let's wrap it up. Thanks, everyone, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice and joining us in our, like, whatever, fifth or sixth year of doing this. This is wonderful. Be sure to star heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. And then head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new job this year. Because why not? It's the new year. New job, new year. And if you hate your t-shirt, you can get t-shirts there, too. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to share?
CSS Trick. Did I almost say CSSTricks.com?
You did, yeah.
Wow. I've just been thinking about it a lot lately. Shop Talk Show.